That was Kathy Clugston. I'm Jackie Leonard.
Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is a special election edition of Your Call. You should have received your voter guide last week. It is massive, a record-setting 224 pages. The total cost for printing and mailing is close to $15 million. If you're going to vote just on state propositions, you've got 17 to read about. Luckily, the nonprofit news site CalMatters has published an extensive guide on the propositions. Laurel Rosenhall did extensive research for this guide. Laurel covers California politics for CalMatters, a nonpartisan nonprofit journalism venture committed to explaining how California's state capital works and why it matters. And Laurel joins us from KQED studios in Sacramento. Hi, Laurel. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you back. Huge congratulations and thanks for this voter guide. I think it's one of the best I've ever seen. It is to the point, full of information, and doesn't take very long. How did you decide how to provide so much information to voters?
Well, thank you so much for the compliment. We worked really hard to make something simple, and making something simple and easy and short is in a lot of ways harder than making something that is, you know, long and complex. But we, you know, we did do some interviews with potential users of something like this, people who kind of across the demographic spectrum of California voters who kind of talked about what they didn't know and what they wanted to know about ballot measures when they prepared to vote. What one thing we heard was that people felt like it was hard to find information compiled in one place, that they were sort of Googling around and finding like lots of different things, but not being sure what they could trust. So one piece of what we've done is curate a selection of really high quality articles that go in depth for the voter who, you know, wants to get deeper on the issues. So each page has a link to articles that will inform you with a lot more depth. Another thing we heard from people is that they really wanted to be able to follow the money and see what kind of, you know, interest groups are weighing in on the ballot measures. So each page has a chart that illustrates very clearly how much money is going into each side of the fight, and also who some of the major funders are. And then we just wanted to make it simple and easy to understand, and also lovely to look at. So we put some effort into picking images and icons that would kind of make it clear, because the numbers do get very confusing. They start to sound the same when you have so many: 55, 56, 65, 66. So we tried to kind of give some visual cues that would make it a little easier for people.
So true. Well, thank you, because it's beautiful, and this is the one I'm sharing with people. All right, so let's dive in and talk about the propositions that we have not discussed on this show yet. The plastic bag ban is very important and very confusing, because we've got two propositions that would affect plastic bags, Proposition 65 and 67. And as you write, again at calmatters.org, Proposition 67 supports the 2014 ban that was signed into law by Governor Jerry Brown and authorizes retailers to charge shoppers 10 cents for other carryout bags, a fee the stores get to keep. Okay, so why, even though the ban was already signed in 2014, why are we voting on this again?
Great question. So, the legislature kind of went through this issue for a couple years. There was a lot of back and forth, and it was very controversial. But in the end, 2 years ago, they went ahead and they approved a statewide ban. And that had the support of the grocery stores, because they had seen that having, you know, different plastic bag rules in different cities and counties around California was way harder on their business than it would be to just have one policy that was the same across the state. So it was supported not only by environmentalists, but also by grocery stores. Of course, you know, the plastic bag industry never liked it, because it would be cutting out their business. And so as soon as Jerry Brown signed the bill in 2014 that would have made a statewide ban, the plastic bag industry started gathering signatures for this referendum. So that's what we're voting on now. It basically put the law on hold since 2014 until the voters could have a say. And if you want to support the law as the legislature approved it, then you are voting yes. If you want to overturn the law that the legislature approved, then you want to vote no.
And you're talking about 67.
Correct.
Right?
That's Prop 67.
Okay.
Right.
So 67 supports the 2014 plastic bag ban signed by Governor Jerry Brown. Okay, that's 67. And then here's where it gets confusing. So Prop 65 would redirect the bag fee money to an environmental fund administered by the State Wildlife Conservation Board. And we should say in the outset that both of these measures were placed on the ballot by plastic bag manufacturers. So tell us about Prop 65.
Right. So that one also was put on the ballot by the plastic bag manufacturing industry. And one of their complaints and objections to the legislation that that was approved was that the money that people pay, the 10 cents, if you forget to bring your own bags and you have to buy a bag from the grocery store, that 10 cents is kept by the grocery stores. So the plastic bag industry all along was arguing against this, saying it shouldn't be able to be held onto by the grocery stores, that if it's a tax on the public, it should be money that goes toward public funds and public purposes. So that has been sort of a consistent argument from the industry, and they authored Prop 65. It would redirect that the money collected from that 10 cent fee, and instead of allowing the grocery stores to keep it, it would direct it to the state fund that would pay for environmental programs.
And if both measures pass, Prop 65 would only be enacted if it receives more votes than Prop 67. And if voters reject Prop 67, then Prop 65 does not apply. So to make it a little more simple, let's just follow the money and look at the supporters. So supporting Prop 65 and opposing Prop 67 are plastic bag companies Hilux Poly, Formosa Plastics, Superbag Corporation. And how much have they spent supporting 65 and opposing 67?
About $6 million, $6.1 million so far.
All right. And then opposing Prop 65 and supporting Prop 67, Californians Against Waste, Environment California, Sierra Club California, California Grocers Association. Again, they're opposing Prop 65 and supporting Prop 67, which means the plastic bag ban would go through. How much have they spent?
$1.4 million.
Okay, so $1.4 million versus $6.1 million. You know, I'm still guessing, Laurel, that people are confused.
Oh, yeah. It's very confusing. And frankly, that is part of, you know, people in the environmental community, frankly, feel like the plastic bag industry put 65 on the ballot just to confuse people, because it does sound good. It does sound like something that someone who valued environmentalism would support, right? Let's take this 10 cent fee and put it toward environmental projects. And because of that, the environmental groups, most of them are not out and out campaigning against 65 because it's too confusing. Instead, they're really putting their messaging behind supporting Prop 67. They just want yes votes on 67, as you said earlier. If they both pass, whichever one gets the most votes is the one that goes into effect. So the environmental movement is putting most of their effort into supporting 67, and they're pretty much trying to ignore 65.
Hmm. And why is that?
Well, you know, the money would go toward environmental programs, so I think that it is confusing and difficult for environmental groups to, you know, make a case publicly why they would oppose a fee going to environmental programs. At the same time, getting the political machinations were such that getting the support of the grocery stores was critical to the passage of this legislation. And the grocery stores felt that they needed to be able to collect some kind of fee for providing these more expensive bags when people forget to bring their own. The goal with the plastic bag ban in the first place is to, you know, encourage people to change their behavior and bring their own bags when they go to the grocery store. But the reality is that the kind of bags that are getting that would be banned are the least expensive kind, the kind that's why they're so widely used in the grocery stores. And they would be replaced with paper or a much heavier plastic bag. And those are costlier for the stores to provide.
All right. So again, support for Prop 65 and opposition to Prop 67 are the plastic bag companies. They've spent $6.1 million. Those who oppose 65 and support 67, Environment California, Sierra Club, Californians Against Waste, they have spent $1.4 million. And I hope you can go to calmatters.org if you're still a little confused by this and find the information. It's there. Very easy to read and understand, but maybe harder to explain. I think it makes more sense when you actually read it.
Good. Thank you. We do have, just when your listeners go to our website, we do have right at the top California Propositions 2016, and that will lay it out for you. You can, you know, click that to see the full list and then select the ballot measure that you want to understand more about.
Okay. And then another issue where we've got two propositions would affect the death penalty. Proposition 62 and 66 seek to address the broken death penalty system here in the in California. Prop 62 would abolish the death penalty, and all current death row inmates would be resentenced to life in prison without parole. That is Prop 62. Can you tell us more about that one and how it got on the ballot?
Yeah, this is another case where probably any voter who is yes on one of these is going to be no on the other one. Prop 62 is another attempt by mostly, you know, liberal constituencies, the ACLU and others, that believe that the death penalty is wrong, it doesn't work, and it is not the way to go about having a successful criminal justice system. So they had there was a similar measure on the ballot 4 years ago. Voters rejected it. This is another attempt. They have a lot of financial backing from Silicon Valley and support from Hollywood. There are a bunch of big names who are giving money or endorsements to overturn to overturn California's use of the death penalty. So that is the Yes on 62 campaign.
All right. So again, 62 would abolish the death penalty, and all current death row inmates would be resentenced to life in prison without parole. Supporters include former President Jimmy Carter, Danny Glover, the ACLU. The Yes on 62 campaign has raised $5.1 million. Top donors include Netflix founder Reed Hastings and Emerson Collective founder Lorene Powell Jobs. Was that Steve Jobs? Is that Steve Jobs'
Correct.
Wife?
That's her his widow, yes.
Okay, his widow. All right. And so that's 62. Now let's talk about Prop 66, which attempts to reform capital punishment by shortening the time of legal challenges. It would also allow the state to house condemned men outside San Quentin, currently the only prison that has a death row for men. Tell us more about Prop 66.
So Prop 66 was mostly brought by the people who oppose 62. So these are people who support the death penalty. They agree that the death penalty as currently practiced in California is not working, but they believe that it should be fixed rather than abolished. And they include a host of law enforcement groups, as well as some prominent California Republicans, such as former Governor Pete Wilson and the House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy of Bakersfield. The interesting sort of human piece of this story is that the measure is backed by Kermit Alexander. He's a former NFL player who had several members of his family murdered. And the murderer is sitting on death row, and he feels that, you know, abolishing the death penalty would be an insult to the families of these victims of these heinous crimes.
So those supporting Prop 66, in addition to Kermit Alexander, include the California Association of Highway Patrolmen, California Correctional Peace Officers Association, Broadcom Corporation co-founder Henry Nicholas. I've never heard of him. Why is he funding Prop 66? Do you know?
He, I've done a little bit of research on him. I don't know a whole lot about him. I know he does live in Southern California. He's a successful businessman and has a history of contributing to sort of law and order type issues.
And those backing Prop 66 and opposing Prop 62 have raised $5.7 million. Top donors include the Peace Officers Research Association and the California Association of Highway Patrolmen. And so let's talk about what happens if both of these measures pass.
This is another case where if both of them were approved by voters with, you know, more than 50% of the vote, the one that had the greater number of raw votes would take effect. So this one is another case where both sides are urging a no on the one and a yes on the other. And depending on your opinion, it's important to be careful about which one you're going for yes and which one you're going for no, because they basically take opposite approaches to the same problem.
All right. So again, that's Proposition 62 and 66. Prop 62 would abolish the death penalty, and all current death row inmates would be resentenced to life in prison without parole. Prop 66 would reform capital punishment by shortening the time of legal challenges and allow the state to house men outside of San Quentin, the only prison that has death row for men. And I hope you can tune in a little about 20 minutes. We're going to talk about some of the bills Jerry Brown signed, including a few that will allow people to do more to try to prove their innocence. Today, we are spending the first chunk of the show talking about some of the propositions on the ballot. We've got 17. We've had debates on many. We're talking about some of those we haven't discussed yet. And CalMatters.org has an amazing guide. It's very easy to read. They follow the money. They also have information on people who are supporting and opposing. CalMatters.org. Today, we're joined by Laurel Rosenhall. She did extensive research for the guide. She covers California politics for CalMatters, a nonprofit journalism outlet. This is a special election edition of Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is a special election edition of Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar, and today we are talking about some of the 17 state props on the ballot. You should have received your voter guide by now. It's a whopping 224 pages. The total cost for printing and mailing is close to $15 million. Luckily, there are outlets out there like CalMatters that have published a very easy-to-read guide on this proposition, CalMatters.org. I hope you can share this with friends who might be overwhelmed by the ballot. Laurel Rosenhall did extensive research for the guide. She covers California politics for CalMatters, a nonprofit journalism outlet that's committed to explaining how the state capitol works here in California. And if you have any questions about some of these props, we'd love to hear from you. If you're getting any mailers, if you want to talk about the money. There's so much money being spent on these propositions. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's talk about one that's very important but isn't getting much attention. That is Proposition 55, which would extend the 2012 voter-approved tax increase on high-income earners for 12 more years. The tax applies to those who earn over $250,000 a year for individuals and over $500,000 a year for couples. Most of the revenue, which would be between $4 billion and $9 billion a year, would go to K through 12 education, with the remaining set aside for community college and low-income healthcare programs. Laurel, how did this one get on the ballot?
Well, you may remember that 4 years ago, Jerry Brown was touting Proposition 30. He backed it heavily, traveling the state, going to college campuses and making appearances all over California, saying that we desperately needed more revenue to keep schools running and to reverse some of the really drastic cuts that the government made during the recession. The governor touted that 2012 tax increase as a temporary tax increase, and it is expiring in 2 years. So there are lots of folks in the public education world who are sort of looking toward the future where that tax is going to expire and trying to figure out how they're going to fill the gaps. Now, it's true that the funding picture right now for schools is much better than it was 4 years ago when voters approved that tax increase. But as you can imagine, anyone who works in public education is looking to the future. And if the tax were to come to an end in 2 years, that potentially could mean a loss of funds if there is another recession in the future.
And Prop 55 is supported by the California Hospitals Association, SEIU, Local 1000, the California Teachers Association. I had to look twice when I looked at how much they've raised, almost $50 million on this one.
Yeah, this is a very important measure for anyone who's in public education or public sector healthcare. The tax revenue from this would be huge, and it would go entirely toward education and healthcare. Most of it would go for K-12 education, with the remaining portion for community colleges and Medi-Cal healthcare program for the poor.
Opponents include the California Chamber of Commerce, the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, the National Federation of Independent Business. I was also surprised to learn that they haven't raised any money.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how that changes over the course of the next 5 or 6 weeks, if any money does come in. So far, the no campaign has been pretty quiet, but we'll see what happens over the next month.
Okay, so again, Prop 55 would extend the 2012 voter-approved tax increase on individuals making more than $250,000 a year and couples making over $500,000 a year. And this would run through the year 2030. They are expected to see revenues ranging from $4 billion to $9 billion every year, depending on the economy and the stock market. And most of that revenue would go to K through 12 education, community colleges, and low-income healthcare programs. And Laurel, because this is now on the books because of this 2012 voter-approved tax increase, how transparent is it? Are you able to really follow the money to see how the money is being spent?
Oh, well, that is, I think it's complicated, but I think that, the money gets sent to the local school districts, and the local school districts are supposed to, make these accountability plans. Of course, their budgets are public documents, but it is up to the locals of how they spend the money. And so, some of them are providing more more resources to their students, whether that's books or science supplies or iPads or what have you. Mm-hmm. But many are using it for compensation for teachers who, didn't see raises during the recession or what have you. So it's going toward, in education, a huge amount of the expense of education is salary and benefits, because it's a very obviously people-intensive business. And so that is where a lot of the money in education budgets goes.
Right. And a lot of teachers are having a hard time teaching living where they teach because of the high cost of living.
Certainly along the coast, that's the case.
Right. Okay, so that's Prop 55. And another ballot prop that would affect education is Proposition 51, which authorizes $9 billion, $9 billion in bonds to build new schools and modernize existing ones. Most of the money would be for K through 12 schools in California, with about $2 billion for community colleges. How did this one get on the ballot?
Well, this is kind of an interesting case. Traditionally, the legislature puts these kind of school construction bonds on the ballot, and they just haven't done it in recent years. And so in this case, the builders got together, their combination of home developers and construction groups that work on building schools, and they got together and they put this on the ballot themselves. So this is something that is funded, you know, like most of these ballot measures, funded by the industry that would benefit from it. And there is, you know, basically no funded opposition to it. Like, again, it's another case where we're not hearing much from the opponents. But Jerry Brown is, you know, not a fan of this plan. So he's kind of one of the few people who's spoken out against it.
Yeah, this is interesting. Jerry Brown is opposing this along with the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association and the California Taxpayers Action Network. What are your thoughts, or what do the facts tell us about the opponent's argument? They say Prop 51 would benefit suburban home builders without doing much to help schools in low-income communities.
So there's a whole formula for how the bond money gets dispersed and which kind of projects and in which communities get the money. And the way this one is structured, the governor has said, would do more for, you know, new emerging communities and build new schools. In other words, these are kind of the growing suburban communities, as opposed to making upgrades in existing, you know, more low-income communities in California. That's his criticism of it. But again, we don't see kind of a big opposition coming out. Certainly no funded opposition has emerged so far. And, you know, voters in general tend to be very favorable to school bonds. It's everyone likes the idea of having schools that are in good shape and building new schools. And a bond is a debt that gets sort of mysteriously paid off down the line. So it's not like a tax that, you know, is staring you in the face right now. It's, I think, a much more vague financial commitment in the eyes of most voters.
And supporters of Prop 51 include the California Parent Teacher Association, the California Chamber of Commerce, and the California Labor Federation, and they've raised $10 million. Again, Prop 51 authorizes $9 billion in bonds to build new schools and modernize existing ones. Most of the money would be for K-12 schools, with about $2 billion for community colleges. That's Prop 51. Let's talk about Prop 63. There are two parts to 63 that are similar to newly approved state laws that are provisions that would require criminal background checks for people purchasing ammunition and prohibit the possession of large capacity magazines, those that hold more than 10 bullets. Prop 63 would also make new requirements for reporting lost or stolen firearms and ammunition, prohibit people from possessing firearms if they're convicted of a firearm, and establish new ways for authorities to remove guns from people who are prohibited from owning them. How did this one get on the ballot?
This is brought by Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom, the former mayor of San Francisco, who is running for governor in 2 years. And he, you know, he announced this. He's backing it. He's given money to it. He's the face of this campaign. And he is touting it as a way to combat the political power of the NRA and try to cut down on gun violence.
And supporters say that something must be done about gun violence. Opponents say criminals, by definition, don't obey the law, so putting more restrictions on guns and ammo won't stop them. Supporters include the California Democratic Party, as you said, Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom. They've raised $4.5 million. Opponents include the California Republican Party, the NRA, the California Rifle and Pistol Association. They've only raised $456,000.
Right. So this will be another interesting one to watch in the next month. I think that I'll be curious to see how much attention comes from the sort of national arms of these organizations. On the one hand, You would expect it to be a big fight. On the other hand, California already has such tough gun laws compared with most other states. And as you mentioned at the top of this segment, the legislature did pass more laws this year that make them even tougher. So I will be curious to see if this does become a very high-profile fight on the national level, because the laws that we already have on the books are really strong, and these additional factors are, they would create new layers of restrictions, but they the toughest parts of this ballot measure were already enacted by the legislature this year.
All right, again, this is Prop 63. It would require criminal background checks for people purchasing ammunition and prohibit the possession of large capacity magazines, those that hold more than 10 bullets. And again, this is a voter guide over at calmatters.org. They did an amazing job of putting all of this information together. It's very easy to read. There's information about the backers of these bills, how much money is being spent. And Laurel Rosenhall is with CalMatters. She's a reporter covering California politics for CalMatters. It's calmatters.org. Laurel, we have just about 5 minutes left. And when you were on last time around, you talked about the big spenders in California. You specifically wrote about three multimillionaires staking a claim on the state's ballot. You've got Tom Steyer, Charles Munger Jr., and Sean Parker. You're constantly updating this. What can you give us some updates on how much more money these three guys have spent and why they're so involved?
Sean Parker is the most elusive of them all. I haven't talked to him. He doesn't seem to be talking to the media very much. He's, of course, the first president of Facebook and the founder of Napster, the music sharing platform. And his contributions are now over $7 million for the marijuana legalization ballot measure. That's Proposition 64.
Hmm. And, well, he's not giving you an interview, so you can't ask him. But we had a debate about Prop 64, I think it was last week or the week before. And people who oppose legalizing marijuana say the big spenders are basically in it for the green rush. The people who support legalizing marijuana say the big spenders are in it because of social justice issues. What are you hearing?
I'm hearing the same two arguments that that you just summarized. I do think that, it's noteworthy that at the same time that someone who has all of the success of developing these online platforms is funding this ballot measure. There's also this exploding trend in marijuana delivery websites I'm sure you're familiar with. A bunch of these companies are based in the Bay Area and receiving millions of dollars of venture capital. Mm. And their whole business model is to be kind of like an Uber for medical marijuana. So people can place an order online. The service, picks up the marijuana from a dispensary and delivers it to the customer at their home. And there is a lot of technology around marijuana use that probably would be a surprise to a lot of people, both at the consumer level, as I just described, and also in terms of the development of software for marijuana industry businesses to run their business on. It's because marijuana is still illegal in the eyes of the federal law, cannabis businesses can't use all of the normal banking software and other kinds of business software that most companies use. It's a cash business. So there is definitely a tech marijuana intersection, and I can't say why anyone's giving the money that they're giving, but I can point to the fact that, Silicon Valley is very interested in marijuana right now.
That's right. And according to your reporting, marijuana investment groups estimate that legalization in California could spawn a $6.5 billion industry by the year 2020. So there's a lot of money to be made if Proposition 64 passes, which would legalize recreational marijuana.
Right.
And before we let you go, anything else we need to know about other people who are putting big bucks into these propositions?
I just encourage everyone to check out our website, calmatters.org, or calmatters.org/elections if you want to go straight to the proposition guide. We are updating the Follow the Money segment twice a week with new figures on how the interest groups are spending money to support or oppose the various ballot measures. And we'll be continuing to write stories about these ballot measures through the election. So I just encourage everyone to remember that, you know, if you live in California, your vote in November is about a lot more than who you want to send to the White House. There are so many important questions on the ballot. They're confusing, and it does take a little time to figure out how you want to vote.
CalMatters.org. We also have a link at YourCallRadio.org. Laurel Rosenhall did extensive research for this incredible guide. She covers California politics for CalMatters, a nonprofit journalism venture committed to explaining how the state capitol works and why it matters. I hope you'd add this to your daily list to check out. They do great work. Laurel, once again, really, you did a great job with this voter guide, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Rose. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk about some of the bills that Governor Jerry Brown signed and vetoed. Lots of important legislation. This is a special election edition of Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call, a special election edition of Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. And now we're going to talk about some of the bills Governor Jerry Brown signed and vetoed. Earlier this month, he signed Senate Bill 32, a landmark bill requiring California to reduce greenhouse gas emissions to 40% below 1990 levels by the year 2030. To get a summary of some of the key bills he signed or vetoed, we are joined by Jeremy White, a staff writer with the Sacramento Bee. Hi, Jeremy. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me. A little nervous about following my always talented colleague, Laurel Rosenhall, but I'll do my best.
You'll do your best. We will not ask you to talk about all 789 bills. It's just amazing to think. So Jerry Brown has until tomorrow to sign or veto these 789 bills. Let's talk about some of the bills he signed. So many historic bills. He signed legislation granting farm workers the same rights to overtime pay as other Californians. This was a huge victory for farm workers.
That's right. This is something that had been attempted for a long time, and the bill did not succeed even on its first attempt this year, but the second time around they got the votes and they sent it to the governor, and he has not illuminated his thinking on that one, but he decided that it was worth his signature.
And when we had you on last time, we talked about the fact that farm workers left their jobs and they went to Sacramento to lobby for this bill day after day after day, and they're just thrilled that in the year 2016 they're finally going to get overtime.
Yes, I should note that they do, before this bill was signed, they did get some limited overtime, just not the same sort of 40-hour standard that applies to most other workers.
All right. And so many other important ones. He signed a bill, we talked about this in our last show about violence against women. Assembly Bill 1978 requires janitors and their supervisors to complete sexual harassment training beginning in 2019. There was an amazing PBS documentary about rape, women who are janitors working the late shift who are raped. And so this came from that film.
That's right. It also creates some registration requirements to try to sort of keep a handle on fly-by-night operators and that type of thing. But yes, that bill grew out of that documentary and sort of this realization of what an issue there is.
Another one that affects women, we have done shows about what women who work in nail salons have to deal with. There are 129,000 manicurists in California. They make about $21,000 a year, and they are exposed to toxic chemicals. Another bill, AB 2437, will require nail salons to post signage about workers' rights, such as minimum wage, overtime, meal and rest periods, in languages that their employees can understand. We also saw that explosive New York Times investigation last year about this issue.
Yes, I think that, you know, the two bills, as you noted, are sort of the common thread there is workers in a section of the economy that are more open to exploitation, often not English speaking. And so I think both of these bills are sort of an effort to pay a little more attention to workers in that sort of easily exploited part of the economy.
We just talked about the death penalty, the propositions that are going to be on the ballot, and the Northern California Innocence Project is celebrating three bills that Governor Jerry Brown signed. One would make it easier for wrongfully convicted people in California to use new evidence to prove their innocence. They say that for too long, Californians convicted and imprisoned for crimes they did not commit have struggled and most often failed to prove their innocence, and this bill changes that.
Yes, I would encourage you to read a great story written by a former intern of ours named Rachel Kors, which sort of explored this issue of when folks are exonerated, what the state owes them. And it's a pretty interesting and contentious issue. And I think certainly this, you mentioned the death penalty, this notion of people being wrongfully convicted is one that lends a lot of fuel to arguments to overturn the death penalty on the premise that there's a risk of executing innocent people.
Yep. And then another one, Assembly Bill 813, will for the very first time allow innocent people to challenge their wrongful convictions even if they're no longer incarcerated, so they can clear their name after they've been released. This is another very important piece of legislation.
Yeah, that's also a big one.
Senate Bill 1389 requires law enforcement to electronically record interrogations of all murder suspects. Current law only requires police to record interrogations of juvenile murder suspects. This bill, according to the Innocence Project, will help reduce false confessions and will support proper interrogation practices.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of concern about interrogation, about sort of coerced testimony and that type of thing, and how fallible it can be. And so this is a bill that requires some more oversight. I believe this is even a concept that President Obama has gotten behind. Don't quote me on that, although I should probably not say that because I'm on the radio. But, yeah, it's an interesting bill.
All right, so really important legislation. What other your colleagues obviously can't write about all of these, but you mentioned one piece. What other pieces of legislation have your colleagues taken an in-depth look at that Governor Brown has signed?
Well, there are so many bills out there. I mean, we've taken a look at a lot of them. I would say that there are a couple major ones that we're still keeping an eye out for, which, for all I know, we could get a decision on during this broadcast. One of them is a bill inspired by the Brock Turner case, the sexual assault by a Stanford student, which would mandate prison terms for sexually assaulting unconscious victims. That's sort of a big one. There are a couple election bills, including one that would expand the options for publicly financed elections that we're still sort of looking at. But as you mentioned, we're sort of getting down to the end here. So
right. The one that he has not signed or vetoed is a campaign finance reform bill. It would enhance disclosure of political spending and allow citizen-funded elections to be quickly signed into law. And I'm just reading an op-ed by the supporters at the Sacramento Bee.
Yes. There's California voters a while back passed an initiative that limits publicly financed elections. And so the bill on the governor's desk would lift some of those restrictions and make it easier for local jurisdictions to hold publicly financed elections, in which generally the way it works is once you qualify, there are sort of public matching funds.
Right. Okay. And so that's Senate Bill 1349 and Senate Bill 1107, if you want to raise your voice on these. Again, Governor Brown has until tomorrow to sign or veto these bills. Another important one, I forgot we were just talking about prisons. Governor Brown signed a bill to restore the voting rights of convicted felons serving time in county jails. This is a big one.
Yeah, I think this is the broader context here is California has been under a federal order to reduce its prison population. As a part of that, a lot of sort of lower-level nonviolent offenders are moved out of the prison system, whether to local jails or what have you, sort of coming under the control of more local law enforcement. And so this bill, there was a sort of lawsuit related to this that helped spur it, but I think it's part of a larger trend you see of the legislature saying, okay, as long as we're thinking about reducing our prison population and sort of thinking about how we handle lower-level crimes. You saw the same thing with Proposition 47, the voters saying, okay, you know, theft and drug possession, we don't want these to be felonies anymore. I think the restoring voting rights is sort of part of that same trend. I should say it was a pretty controversial bill. Those were close votes in the legislature. Law enforcement opposed it. A lot of lawmakers were sort of incredulous that California was, as they saw it, sort of sending a signal to people that you can commit felonies and not suffer enough repercussions. But, you know, the argument of allowing folks to rehabilitate themselves ended up winning the day on this one.
Mm. So again, convicted felons serving time in county jail will be able to vote once again. Jerry Brown also signed a piece of legislation that's getting global attention. It will revoke California's 10-year statute of limitations on rape cases. Beginning next year, the bill will end the statute of limitations in certain rape and child molestation cases. This got a lot of attention because of the women who were assaulted, say they were assaulted by Bill Cosby more than a decade ago.
Right. Some of those women came to testify for the bill. You know, supporters, including the senator who carried the bill, will say they appreciated the testimony. Those women helped illustrate their need for the bill, but they make an argument that regardless there's been a need for this bill, that if you have been raped, you should be able to see your assailant charged, even if it's years later. But, you know, again, a lot of folks, including public defenders, raised some concerns about this one, because when you're putting these types of cases together years or decades after the fact, memories fade, witnesses become more difficult to locate. California law already does allow for sort of reopening rape cases even after the statute has expired in the case of new DNA evidence being discovered. So the cases that we're talking about really would largely be ones that are built on those types of evidence, and there are concerns about what that could mean. But again, the larger argument won out that if you are raped, you deserve justice no matter how much time has passed.
Mm. And this one goes into effect in January.
That is correct.
Okay. And a couple others that have been signed. Tell us about AB 1289 that requires Uber and Lyft background checks.
Yeah, you know, this is, as those types of services have become more and more popular and have sort of competed with and even undercut the taxi industry, there every year are efforts to impose new regulations on Uber and Lyft, to whether it's more background checks or sort of altering the types of vehicle licensing that goes on. And so I think this is sort of fits into that larger thing of saying, you know, these businesses deserve to be regulated as other businesses are. And, you know, this bill got signed, and I am confident in saying this will not be the last bill related to Uber and Lyft we see out of the legislature.
And we talked about this one briefly when you were on last time, but Jerry Brown did sign a bill against the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions movement on Saturday. Brown's signature makes California the 13th state to enact an anti-BDS measure, most of which bars state contracts or pension funds from going to entities, nonprofits, or corporations that support BDS. Again, it's Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions. This is Palestinian-led. A lot of Jews, Israelis also support this. It's a Palestinian campaign for the academic and cultural boycott of Israel. Can you talk about the ramifications of this new law? Because it's in place in 12 states now.
Sure. And as you noted, there's sort of a larger global context for this with the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions movement. In California, you've seen a lot of it on college campuses. Lawmakers who did this bill sort of cited how more and more college students are agitating for this and sort of trying to make it a policy. This bill ended up being a little less stringent. The initial version would have said you can't give state contracts to firms that boycott another country. The updated version is not quite as prescriptive. It says that you basically have to certify that you're not discriminating under sort of state laws barring discrimination, and it does specifically mention Israel. So, you know, whether or not it's in the original tough form, I think it still is a sort of a meaningful statement by California on this movement, which, as you mentioned, has sort of become a leading way to express opposition to Israeli policy.
Who pushed for this one? Do you know?
Jewish legislators were a big part of it. There is a Jewish caucus, and they, you know, cited what they saw as sort of rising anti-Semitism related to this movement. They had some support from sort of Israeli government officials who expressed their interest in the bill, and so that's kind of the background on this one.
And is this one getting much media attention?
I would say so, yes. I think it's, you know, the BDS movement is one that is a sort of globally significant one, given how anything having to do with Israel and Palestinians is extremely attention-grabbing. And so I think this one is one that a lot of folks will watch.
And we have just a couple minutes left. What about the bills he vetoed? I mean, this also speaks volumes about where we are, and it'd be interesting to talk to the governor about this one. He vetoed the ban on public smoking in parks and beaches.
Yeah.
Why?
You know,
I was surprised by that.
You know, the governor did sign into law some other pretty tough anti-tobacco bills, including raising the smoking age to 21, regulating e-cigarettes as tobacco products. So he certainly has, you know, sided with public health officials who want stronger tobacco control than other bills this year. This was one that he felt was sort of a step too far.
Another one, ban on public smoking at colleges. He vetoed that one.
Oh, right. And with that one, he sort of deferred to colleges being able to do this themselves. A lot of campuses have already gone smoke-free, and so this is something where it's sort of more and more so becoming the case at these campuses anyway, and I think he sort of said, let's let that process play itself out rather than impose a mandate on them when it comes to campus smoking policies.
He also vetoed a bill that would have provided financial assistance for sex crime victims.
I'm honestly not familiar with that one.
Okay. Sorry. And another one, there were a couple other bills that he vetoed that would have helped, for example, women, poor women, buy diapers. We talked about that last time you were on. And then also the tax on tampons.
Right. You know, the governor is always pretty cautious when it comes to taxes. He sees bills that repeal taxes as, you know, the equivalent to cutting revenue to the state. And so I think that he, you know, those are both bills that were pretty popular and buzzy. And he, I think these, this sort of approach of legislators picking away, you know, a tax break here, a tax incentive there, is something that he tends to shy away from. And there have certainly been calls to take a broader look at California's taxes in general. The people pushing for those bills said it was sort of a matter of what our tax code says about our priorities, right? If we're taxing diapers and tampons, are we saying that they're not essential products in the ways non-taxed things like, for example, candy are? So perhaps that broader tax overhaul will happen. I wouldn't put too much money on that one. It's sort of something folks talk about a lot, and it's tough to do, but that was kind of where the governor was coming from.
Well, if you want to read about the bills that the governor signed or vetoed, there are a few that are still on his desk, and he has to take action before tomorrow, by tomorrow. We've been joined by Jeremy White, a staff writer with the Sacramento Bee, and thank you for coming to the table with so much information, Jeremy.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.